Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 17th of August. We always love talking about books, and one of our favorite book people, his enthusiasm is marvelous. Daniel Golden, owner of Boswell Books, based on the east side of Milwaukee, is our guest this hour. You know, we're talking about, it's still summertime. It is still summertime for at least a month. So we'll continue our conversation about summertime reading. Is there something that you do differently in the summer? Do you read books that are a little lighter? I try to do that, and then I realize that all the books I read are usually of substance, so I have to go back to people like Charles Dickens. It's been my Charles Dickens summer. I love him. I remember how much I loved him when I was in high school, and I still love him. So we're going to be talking about summertime reads, or also some of you might like to read big, substantial nonfiction books as well. Daniel reads everything. He has great suggestions for us, and I know that you will as well. Let me give you our phone number, 800-486-8655. I've asked him because Irish Fest is coming up to give us suggestions of Irish writers as well. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and we welcome suggestions from you as well. You're also an audience of readers, so let us know what you are reading, and we can keep a list, and we'll put it up on our... Do I have a piece of paper with me? Piece of paper for a list. There we go. So we can all keep our lists, and we'll put it on our Facebook page later this day. Daniel, hello.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to have you here, and you always come with all these books. They're spread out all over, and it's just terrific.
I'm a visual person. I need visual cues.
Yeah, sort it out. Yeah. So thank you. Do you change your reading habits in the summer? Do you go lighter or not?
No. And that's partly because I don't get to go do the traditional summer things people like to do, like lie on the beach and go to vacation. And partly because booksellers tend to read a season ahead. So right now we're being tossed all these books that are in January and very bleak and serious. And that said, some of my booksellers, especially at the beginning of the summer, get excited by very summery kind of reads, which I kind of put in two categories. There's the blockbustery, they almost seem like movie kind of books. There's a little science fiction element to them, a little thriller element. This has been a really great summer for that. And then there's sort of the women, very plot-driven, fun, also a little thriller element often, a little romance, a little thrills, you know, just sort of very emotional and enthusiastic, well-written. And but definitely focusing a little more on plot than a complicated structure. That said, you know, probably one of our biggest books for summer is Visit from the Goon Squad by Jennifer Egan, which is about, as to me, not a particularly summery book. It's very dense and complicated, interconnected stories and looking for little details and stories told with PowerPoint, you know. So, you know, customers they definitely publish into it, and you can see if you look at the bestseller lists right now, the hardcover bestseller lists, there's almost nothing, everything's got an escapist element to it. Even the literary books, definitely the big literary book of the summer is Ann Patchett's State of Wonder. And, you know, there's definitely an exciting, they go off to the Amazon. There's a foreignness that has, it seems like a very summer literary read to me.
I have not read that yet. I know friends who like it very much.
Well, I'm going to give you a recommendation that's meant only for you.
Well, we better turn off the mics.
It's got a Dickensian ending.
Oh, you know what I've been reading this summer. All right. Wonderful.
And I would say the other literary book, Paris Wife by Paula McLean, which has actually been around, wasn't published as a summer book. It's been hanging around since late winter, early spring. But Paris is also very hot for some reason. We're just selling Paris books like crazy for the last few months. And that is the novel, which is about Hemingway's first marriage to Hadley, that has a driven a lot of the sales, as has, of course, the Woody Allen movie. We're very excited because the woman who wrote the biography of Hadley Hemingway, which was originally called Hadley, they're reissuing it. It's called Paris to the Limit. It turned out she lived in Chicago. So she's actually she's going to come up on, I think it's Saturday, September 24th.
Oh, great.
For a talk. And it ties very much into both the Woody Allen movie and the Paris Wife.
Have you seen the movie yet, Daniel? I haven't either, so we can't talk about it, I guess.
But it's sort of the way I recommend books, though. I'm in the store all day, every day. When I'm not – actually, for a while yesterday, I was receiving Christmas cards to talk about how seasons are off. But, you know, people come in all day long and tell me what did they like, what did they not like. And they definitely talk as much about movies as they do about books because we're down the block from the Downer Theater.
Oh, right.
Maybe six blocks from the Oriental. Midnight in Paris has been playing – is that – so I have the title, right?
That's right?
Has been playing at the Oriental for a long time. And now The Help opened another – and that seems to be the other theme is that it's – summer is not usually the time when you see a lot of book-related films come out. But for some reason, this summer has been just awash with really great translations of books to the screen. Sarah's Key just opened last week by Tatiana Durazne, and that's been doing very well. And it's a good example of the book delivers. You know, it's about the Ville d'Eve and a journalist going back. And the movie is getting really good feedback from my customers, Kristen Scott Thomas. The one thing that some people had trouble with in the book is that, as seems to happen a lot in books, the journalist is not the most the journalist narrator, to some, is not the most emotionally bonding character. I mean, a lot of people had that trouble with Little B, too, in the Sarah character. And I guess I don't know what it is why writers write journalists that way sometimes. But in the movie, Kristen Scott Thomas is very – has seems to be much warmer and seems to connect with people a lot more. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Snowflower and the Secret Fan – a book that sold for years, Lisa C., her last book debuted at number one on the bestseller list. The movie was down the block from us, and the reviews were mixed, and it didn't really drive sales. On the other hand, One Day, which is opening in a couple of weeks, maybe next week at the Oriental, which was a book that was a paperback original, so they didn't really have high expectations. It was a big hit in Great Britain about a couple kind of had a same time next year sort of thing, a couple revisiting the relationship. The reads were incredible, and the movie buzz is great, and so we're selling that like crazy, as is every bookstore or wire service downline, whatever.
And let's spend a few minutes. You know, I was kind of put off by this story because I'm put off by African-Americans tending to white people's kids. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, I never read the book, and the movie wasn't of interest to me. And then yesterday afternoon, I spent time with some friends talking about The Help, and they had seen the movie and liked it very much. And I know a lot of people who have read the book as book clubs. Is it something to get into?
Well,
it is.
Once again, I use the power of crowdsourcing to talk about it. And I would say it is one of those books that is very – a lot of people passionately love. Some people don't love. One of my customers, giving a shout out to Dawn, an African-American – very educated African-American woman who's also very opinionated. She liked the book. She had issues with the book, but she liked it. And actually, the movie itself has been a hit with African-American audiences, as of, from one of the recaps that I read recently.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that it's like so many books, you know, you have to – and movies, and you have to sort of jump through hoops to appreciate it. And if there's a hoop – you know, if there's something that is sticking in your craw or just doesn't work for you or something you have a particular – you know, that you're pretty sensitive about – you know, you just can't get through the hoop to like it. I mean, I find that happens all the time with customers. Oh,
that's
and myself.
Description. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll see the movie and then maybe read the book. So as I told you, this has been – I was reminded of Charles Dickens on a show some months ago, and I was thinking of Great Expectations, which I loved when I was a freshman in high school, so I thought I would start reading it again. And am I ever glad I did? He is marvelous. His descriptions of human beings and human behavior and getting caught up in the story. I'm going to be on a Dickens kick, I think, this year.
I use the story – I think I've mentioned it more than once, so I'm sort of embarrassed about it, but – a couple of my fellow booksellers and I decided that we were going to have a classics club to read the books that we were embarrassed that we hadn't read, which is actually my – I do run an in-store book club, and I do that with contemporary fiction. So I just go through all the – I said, I have to pick the books because these are all the books that I'm the most embarrassed about for some reason or other. And we read David Copperfield because we said this is a terrible gap in our knowledge base. We only round up reading a few books, but and I was like, oh, so that's who Uriah Heep is. I mean, because there's so many cultural references that you just go totally over my head, and it was a really great experience. So it is interesting how people write differently when they're paid by the word, but it was I enjoyed it immensely, and I do think it's we make sure we have a lot, and we've talked about going back and reading another Dickens.
We try
to revive the club, though. We've been fighting this problem. We haven't reconvened because we're still fighting over what book to read. I said Middlemarch shows up in every other novel I read, and how can I not know what I'm talking about? Yeah. But.
I have that on the – that's at home.
You can join the club.
Maybe I should. And your favorite read of the summer, Daniel?
Ooh, that's a good one.
You have many?
One of the things that I can share with viewers is – listeners is that I'm always very late on things. And I'm really enjoying – emotionally selling a lot of books that are sort of old or, you know, that people don't know about. One book that I love that I consider a nice summer read is The Slap by Christos Tsiolkas. It's an Australian novel that won the Commonwealth Prize, which is the big Australian prize. I use the prizes as sort of a hook. I mean, it's a very plot-driven novel about a Greek community in Australia that is split by this incident involving adult slapping a child at a party. But the book is really about all sorts of cultural slaps that happen, starting with the most atrocious narrator. It's one of those stories that jumps from narrator to narrator, which I love. And it starts with possibly the most horrendous narrator ever. He's just sexist and he's ugly and he's violent and you have to go through 20 pages of him to get into the book. And it's also about the slap of multiculturalism that, you know, things will not go back, you know, to the way they were as this Greek community becomes infused with Indian relatives and Chinese relatives and things like that. I really enjoyed that book a lot. I would say the hardcover the hardcover book that I like this summer was such an unsummary book. So it's been every time we sell one, you know, the buyer, Jason, kind of gives a big cheer because it's just so rare, is a book called The Upright Piano Player. And I think his name is David Abbott. And it's this very story of this retiring business executive who's had a series of very sad things. Reversals and a couple of really terrible ones, including his separation from his wife, who's dying of cancer. We know already at the beginning of the book that something's happened to his grandson. But it's got definitely an Anita Bruckner feel to it, Louis Begley, early Ian McEwan. It's just beautifully written. Mm. It's been so quiet. It's such an unsummary book, except I would say that you could finish it in a short weekend because it's not very long.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of my favorite books
of
the summer.
Really?
But, you know, I love a challenge, and it's possibly, you know, I can't go with all of those kind of books because it's so hard to sell. So, you know, some of these other books that I, you know, you find yourself in a bookstore separating out a little what you love, but is just really, it's like your child who's doing badly in school and you can't figure out what to do. And then you've got that child who's doing, your other child who's doing really well, and you can't talk about your children this way because you really love them both, but you spend a little, if one child can't play the piano and one child can play it pretty well, you do wind up paying a little more for the piano lessons of the kid who can do well. And that's a terrible thing, and it's a Sophie's Choice kind of moment, and I can't believe I did that reference. So apologies to everybody. I love both my children. I don't have any children. I meant book children.
Daniel Golden is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're talking books this hour. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, The Atlantic, has an entire issue, the whole issue of September, devoted to the middle class, asking the question, can the middle class be saved? In fact, they say America is composed of two distinct groups, the rich and the rest, and for the purposes of investment decisions, the second group doesn't even matter. So we will speak with the national editor of The Atlantic, our number two of our show. To your phone calls, 800-486-8655. Lynn is our first caller from Pulaski. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an English teacher, so I try to pick things up over the summer that I can recommend to students when I come back in the fall. One book that I picked up at Barnes & Noble that I was just going to kill time and then had to buy and stay up all night reading was 13 Reasons Why. And I'm sorry, I don't know authors off the top of my head, but it's a girl who commits suicide and then sends a series of tapes out to the people who influenced her to make her decision. So that one was phenomenal. The Art of Racing in the Rain is what my book club is reading right now, which is about a semi-pro race car driver told from the point of view of his dog, which was just lovely. And I want to put a plug in to all the adults out there. Go back and reread To Kill a Mockingbird. You will look at it much, much differently than you did when you read it when you were in school.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to mention a couple of books that you might enjoy. Based on that, everybody who's reading Art of Racing the Raid seems to be reading A Dog's Purpose by W. Bruce Cameron, another book that you'll probably find on tables at both independent and chain stores and virtual tables on websites probably. It is a dog living through several dog lives and finding meaning and seems to get – I was just reading one of those websites where the reviews come fast and furious at me, and a number of people said they liked it even better. Another book I think if you read like 13 Reasons Why, maybe you might like Lauren Oliver's Before I Fall, about a girl's last I think that's a good connection. I don't know. We're doing a lot of kids' events this fall, and so I'm, you know, digging through kids' books and reading more of them, my booksellers, and she's going to be coming to town in October, I think October 11th, and I think it's at North Shore Library, actually. Mm. So, that's, I think, might be a nice match. It is more of a teen book, but might cover some of the similar themes.
I liked The Art of Racing in the Rain as well. It's a lovely book. Thank you. Thanks for the call. So dogs are reincarnated, Daniel?
Yes, I guess
they are.
So. Yes, I, apparently. And the dog books, I mean, I did have a customer come in this week and say to me, you know, your cat books are on the bottom shelf of your pet section, and your dog books are much higher, and you have way more of them, and do you have some sort of prejudice? And I did try to convey that I do love animals, I love both animals, I'm allergic to both animals, except for certain hairless breeds, but it does seem, at least right now, you know, Dewey the library cat had time in the sun, but it does really seem like right now it's a dog moment. And Stacy, one of my booksellers, just wrote a blog piece on canophile books, and not sure if that's a word or not, but I love to make up words. I believe I'm just picking it up from her. There's a book called Dog Sense by John Bradshaw that's been doing great in our store. I actually have the subtitle written down on this one. How the New Science of Dog Behavior Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. We're selling it really well and have been all summer.
This is a dog season. What's going on with dogs? There are tons of books about dogs.
Well, and it's all capped up. I get to talk about an event. I'm so excited. I've been working so hard on this because back when I was at Schwartz, one of our favorite authors in the world was John Katz.
Oh, and I love John
everybody
Katz.
Everybody, John Katz.
I love John
so,
Katz.
So last year, I did an event with the Wisconsin Humane Society in the store, and it went okay. They were like, they showed up. It was all right. We had a decent audience, not great. And I said, okay, we got to take this to the next level, and we really need to showcase the Wisconsin Humane Society because it's such a great facility. And I said, who do you want more than anything in the world? What author? And they said, they like three of them said John Katz. And so that was like our big pitch for fall from one of our publishers. And he's coming.
John is coming?
He's coming October 6th.
October 6th.
I think that's a Thursday.
Okay.
At the Humane Society.
Oh.
I think there's going to be a $5 admission. And it's a book about actually dealing with the loss of your pet. And which is a very important thing. We're trying to get the word out to vets because it's something that people deal with all the time. And I think it's also really good for the Humane Society because that's a time when people actually do go to adopt, you know, go to adopt. So we're so excited.
He's a marvelous man. We've interviewed him so many times. It's been a while now. But also what he's been through. So we've known him for years and years. And he's been through his own struggles with depression, et cetera. And he's better now and doing the work with hospices. And, he's a great guy.
He connects so closely with so many people. I was talking to Stacey, who helps me with events, and she said, oh, yeah, we email each other. I was like, really? You're emailing John Katz? She also connects with a lot of people. So we're so excited. Yeah, because after Schwartz closed, Milwaukee sort of fell off his radar for a while, even though Milwaukee actually got shouted out in one of his books as he loves it so much, and he loved coming. And so we're really glad that we can kind of renew our relationship.
Oh, that's great.
Maybe you'll get to, too.
Please let me know. I'd like to – we should have lunch with him or something. Ooh. I'd really love to do that.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be great. Oh, good. You're filled with good news today. we go to Sarah next from Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Gosh, I have so many book ideas in my head right now. A couple years ago, I did decide I had to read a classic I'd missed, and so I made myself read Middlemarch, and it was so good.
It was.
It was great. It was funny. It was just captivating. I loved it.
All right. For some reason, all I can remember is I did the rule of how many pages you read, and I couldn't do it, so I'll try it again.
You know, it does seem to connect so much with writers and things like that. I think it is... The hoop is pretty, you know, you do have to jump through that hoop because learn it in AP class, but it's not always on every high school curriculum the way some books are. It is a more of an adult book, but it's so great to hear another reinforcement of,
yes. Okay.
That makes me feel guiltier that I haven't read it.
All right, we'll have to read it. Thank you, Sarah, for putting the pressure on.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I wonder how Daniel feels about Borders going out of business, and is that a kind of a good thing for independence or not so much?
We have such mixed feelings about it. I've known a number of people who work there. A lot of them had lost their jobs already. I know a lot of ex-buyers who had lost their jobs. I actually had lunch with the manager of a Borders store that we have really close mutual friends, and I'm kind of trying to get him to open an independent store in a city in Wisconsin. So if you are excited about that, you should talk to me. They were pretty close to us, and we are getting a little pop in sale. I do have friends who had independent bookstores where Borders went kind of right next to them and knocked them out of business. But that said, I worry about consolidation of decision making. Borders made really great books pop into bestsellers. City of Thieves by David Benioff, was a book we loved selling like crazy in hardcover, and they made a concerted effort in paperback, as they did with a number of books, and they took a spectacular book and sort of brought it to the next level, and they did that over and over. They went through some, you know, we all in hindsight say you shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done that. They didn't. The original 50 stores were amazing. I was so shaken in my boots when I went to the first few rollouts of the Borders in other cities, because they were like everything I could do seven times as good as I could do them. But after a series of corporate owners and people who were from the department store industry and two rounds of people from the supermarket industry, they just didn't seem to like books that much.
That's
and
terrible.
It was, you know, it's like anything they could do, and very, you know, they kind of got very fell in love with co-opting the store. I heard ridiculous, you know, every bookstore takes some money to put out a book or put it in a newsletter. You try to let people know that you're doing it, but usually it's stuff that you were going to do anyway. It's more impetus, but they did crazy stuff. So I I've kind of mixed minds, because it's good to have another voice saying, yeah, it's okay to put out that book. You can do it in hardcover. And yeah, that was a long, too long explanation.
No, it's fine. Good. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks very much for the call. Some emails have been coming in. This one from Maria. Dirty Life, by Kristen Kimball, the story of leading the high life of Manhattan to move to a farm in upstate New York to marry the man she loves. Love this book, she said. Also, The 19th Wife by David Ebershoff, about two polygamous wives. Is this ringing a bell? It goes to the founding of the Mormons and polygamy, and a current 19th wife of a modern-day polygamist. Fascinating if you love historical fiction.
Okay, got a good story.
All right.
David Ebershoff was in the store last week.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Oh, this world is tiny.
And I was so excited because I love the book. I've known him. His father actually grew up in Whitefish Bay.
Oh.
Their family isn't here anymore. So I have no idea. And he never told me why he was there. He was up with a friend from Chicago, came to see the bookstore. It's very exciting. We get enough buzz that people will actually go out of their way to see what's going on here.
Right.
And, you know, it's just a bookstore, and I know it's just a bookstore, but we have a lot of fun with it, and you can tell that we really love the books, and we're enjoying it, and he spent a lot of time, bought some stuff, and he was telling us about all these other books, and I got to show him how many copies of 19th Wife we've sold, and he's like, really? You sold 66 copies, which was a lot of books for us, because
right.
We didn't have the author for the paperback, but I really like the book, and I have a recommendation. If you want your polygamy reading library expanded, I've got two books for you. They're really, really, really different from 19th Wife. One is Lonely Polygamist by Brady Udall in paperback. It is also about the LDS, but the spinoff that has polygamy, but it's a totally different kind of book. It's told from their perspective. It's about a man with four wives and 28 kids, and and a marital crisis that actually winds up being about the history of the American West and nuclear testing. And I compare it to Middlesex. I compare it to Middlesex, but his writing style is like Ann Tyler. It's funny, and it's a big, fat book, and I love it so much. And then the other book is The Secret Lives of the Four Wives, which just came out in paperback by a Nigerian writer, because there is a polygamy practiced in Africa as well. And it's told from the perspective of the four wives, and there's a secret, and it's very African. The original title was The Secret Lives of Baba Segi's Wives, and they think they changed that because it seemed like it was playing up the comic nature too much and maybe sounded like Alexander McCall Smith's story, whereas in the paperback, they're really trying to focus more, see how these things happen. It might have been a Barnes & Noble or a Borders person who helped them make this decision, because they'll say when they see the buys, like, well, maybe if you took off Baba Segi, we'd buy more copies. You know, I'm sure Amazon does it too. Independence, we don't get to do it so much. But every so often, like we made a big pitch to keep the paperback cover of Little Bee, and they actually talked about it at a sales conference. So who knows?
Really?
Yeah, I know. I was sort of shocked about that. But in any case, it's called The Secret Lives of the Four Wives, and it's a really interesting, nice, multicultural, you know, culturally different novel. Very different Nigerian story than Little Bee, but it is very rich and evocative of the
good
area.
All mm-hmm. right, great, great. All right, thank you. That'll be, I'm sure, something she'll be going to the bookstore today for. We go to Pascal from Madison.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. I guess I had two questions for you.
Okay.
Okay, the first one was, I guess I was trying to, because I was really interested to find this bookstore that you work at or whatever.
All right, he'll tell you where it is. Daniel.
We're located on Downer Avenue, which is just up the lake, up the bluff from Lake Michigan. We're on the same block as the Downer Theater, probably two blocks north of Columbia St. Mary's, and about six blocks south of UWM, the main campus of UWM. So,
and what's the store called?
It's called Boswell Book Company, or if you're friends with us, Boswell Books.
Boswell?
Boswell.
It's named after, so you want to know, why did you call it that?
Yes.
Why didn't you call it, and is your name Daniel Boswell? It is not. The way people might know, I worked for a local bookstore, a beloved local bookstore called Harry W. Schwartz, which was named after Harry W. Schwartz, though he didn't have a middle name. He put the W in because it sounded really cool. And they were around from 1927 to 2009. And when the family decided to close the store due to various reasons, Carol, the owner, and I had a heart-to-heart about whether one store alone could make it where a multi-store operation couldn't, where you totally get rid of layers of management, where I said, well, what if I did like 7 people's work and never slept? And things like that. If you consolidated the offsite sales into fewer stores and that kind of thing. And so actually 2 stores came out of that. Next Chapter in Mequon, which was where the old Schwartz location is, owned by Lenora, the manager of that store at the time of closing. And my store, I actually didn't work in that store much, sometimes at Christmas or events. I was actually the book buyer for Schwartz for probably about 20 years. I did a few other things too. I managed, coincidentally, the same Mequon store. And I started on the floor of the old Iron Block store on Water in Wisconsin. So Boswell comes from the old Schwartz logo. When they said they didn't want to carry over the Schwartz name, that they wanted to retire it because who knew what we would do with what we'd be selling. I said, could I purchase the logo with the assets? And the family said yes. And it turned out to be James Boswell, the famous biographer. Well, famous in more in Great Britain than here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it.
Anything else?
Yes, the other question I was looking for suggestions on like hard sci-fi time travel novels. I love mind-bending like time travel, and I've been having a hard time finding something that's actually enjoyable to me.
Oh, where is Jason when you need him? Our buyer is a fabulous science fiction reader, and I pay close attention to what he's reading, but I can never remember what has the time travel in it. So it's one of our most successful book clubs, actually, and it's the only one that has a pretty much 50-50 male-female split, which is very exciting to me. But I have actually, you know, this is a really great time for speculative books, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm just going to mention, I'm going to be one of those terrible interviewers who says, no, but okay, here's my answer, and it's not quite your answer, which is, can I just make a big shout out for Ready Player One, which is a dystopian novel set in 2044. Everybody's living in these built-up trailers that are like pods, living on it's the usual suspects of all these dystopian novels: environmental collapse, war, dictatorship, that kind of stuff. Everything involved. So they're all living on a Second Life kind of world that is infused with. It's basically filled with. It's basically set in the 80s. It's crazy and different and that kind of thing. But there's a lot of 80s. Trivia involved in the book. It's an 80s culture novel. And so the guy who's running the site dies, and he's going to give his fortune to the player who solves a series of riddles. So it's got a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory feel about it. That's the way I like to say it. My booksellers are in love with the book. All my science fiction readers are reading it. We have an event, and Next Chapter has an event. He's taking his DeLorean around because he wrote the movie Fanboys, which is popular with a set. She's at Next Chapter on the 28th, which is a Sunday afternoon, and he's at my store, Boswell, on the 29th at 7. And when you come to that event, because you must come because it's going to be incredible, we will give you a list a mile long of time travel, good science fiction novels.
All right. You're on your way, right?
How or you can
say
us.
No.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks very much for the call. We go to Fred next in Sugar Camp. Hi, Fred.
Hi. How are you?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I've got a couple of strong book recommendations from one of America's most underrated authors. His name is Don Pierce. Don is spelled with 2 N's, and Pierce is P-E-A-R-C-E. He wrote Cool Hand Luke, and then most recently in 2005, he wrote one called Nobody Comes Back. He's got a couple other novels. I'm actually thinking about writing his biography, and I spent a weekend as his guest in his home, and I had one of the most amazing experiences of my life. he actually put leg irons on me and had me run laps around his garage and teach me how to dig with leg irons on. This guy makes Hemingway look like a poser. And the original print of Cool Hand Luke only sold 1,300 copies, but it's a story everyone knows all around the world in dozens of languages, and is always the case. The book is 100 times exponentially better than the novel. I'm sorry, than the movie. So I just wanted to throw out that Don Pierce is America's most underrated author, and that his books are pure gold. If anybody is interested, the four books he has published are called Cool Hand Luke, Nobody Comes Back, which was a fictionalized novel of the Battle of the Bulge, absolute page-turner, as riveting as Saving Private Ryan. He wrote one called Dying in the Sun, which was an expose of the old age industry, and a very, very dark comedy called Pierhead Jump, that I think the Coen brothers should have made a movie out of. But I would have been remiss if I didn't share these titles and that name with your listeners today.
All right, Fred.
One of the things that's always so interesting to me about that, do I know who Don Pierce is? I do not. So I'm always learning stuff at these things too. But what it calls to mind is his books seem so different from each other. And this is one of those tricks of being of writing. Do you want to kind of find a niche that you're good at and possibly make a name for yourself because you can build an audience? Or do you want to write a different amazing book every time and thus really be at the – it's only a certain number of people who are going to follow you because there's very little except your greatness. I was thinking about John Williams, the author who wrote Stoner, and he had written four novels, and they were so different from each other that after Stoner, it was hard, you know, which we had sold some. I think Carol rediscovered it. She came back from Elliott Bay in Seattle and told everybody about it. And we sold hundreds of copies of the book. But it was really hard to move to another book from him because they were totally different. I was thinking of Don Winslow, who's more of a mystery thriller writer. But every book he writes is very different from each other. Jennifer Egan, who won Visit from the Goon Squad, she's had that issue. Is that she's written, this was a very contemporary book about the music industry, and her novel before that had speculative elements and kind of set in European castles. And so she's lucky because she's not lucky. She's a really great writer, but she is that that the acclaim found her and her books were discovered by everybody. But that can be a tough thing because you don't sort of build that audience that says, you know, the extreme is a series in science fiction or mystery. But even in fiction, you have to make the decision. Are you going to write what people want or are you going to go in a different direction?
Yeah. Thanks, Fred, for your call. We're going to welcome more phone calls momentarily. The number 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We have a lot of emails today, too. talk@wpr.org. Daniel Golden, owner of Boswell, Boswell Books, an independent bookstore on the east side of Milwaukee, is our guest, and we'll return to you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to some emails here. There are many people as part of a program in Madison reading Enrique's Journey by Sonia Nazario prior to the discussions of it at local libraries over the next few months.
I love those kind of programs, and we actually have a couple coming up. I think one is going to be revealed soon. That's a Milwaukee Reads program. The one that I can talk about is Shorewood has a Reads program for Montana 1948 with Larry Watson. He's going to actually be speaking at the Shorewood Public Library on October 5th, I think, in both the afternoon and the evening, and they're doing a series of discussion groups. It's a wonderful book. I remember the day that I was at like some sales rep presentation, and I got the most passionate, you know, it was just like, it just so totally infused the whole evening. Sometimes a book just captures everybody, and Montana 1948, and it's still like, as people discover that book, and it's been used in these kind of programs all around the country. There's a book coming out very soon from Julia Atsuka. She wrote a book called When the Emperor Was Divine about a very spare, beautiful novel about the Japanese internment. And that's a book. Amy, one of our she buys the kids' books and does a whole bunch of other stuff, one of the managers. That's one of her favorite books of all time, and we – it was one of those books where we weren't selling it, and we put it on her rec shelf because she loves it, and the new book's coming out, and now we're selling it again. And it's just one of those books that works really well because, you know, it's a tricky thing. You have to have something that – I think it's important to have something that crosses over to teens a bit because you want to engage students in this too.
Sure.
But that's fascinating about this other book, Enrique's Journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And another email from Nancy, who's enjoying I Have Friends Reading This Too, Caleb's Crossing by Geraldine Brooks, and she also loved The Paris Wife and The Help.
Oh, I actually might have a couple of suggestions for her. We've had wonderful reads on Caleb's Crossing. Geraldine Brooks, we were lucky enough to host her in the spring, and we're looking forward to a really exciting time selling to book clubs. We've actually – it's been one of those books that actually gets picked up by book clubs in hardcover.
Yes, yeah.
One of the really tricky things about book club selection nowadays is because of ebooks – don't really change price as much when the paperback comes out. So a book club that is reading both printed books and ebooks, there's this pressure from the people who use the library and ebooks to do books earlier in book club, but the people who still buy books want to wait for the paperback. So, you know, we're just on the we're just on the receiving end, but every so often I'll have a book club person come in to me and say, I want to buy the book, but they're doing the book too early. And I feel like that's a fair compromise because, you know, you can agree to read the book and then you can move it around based. I always say to book clubs, I've been doing a lot of book club talks the last few weeks, so I got a whole shtick going. And I always say to people, you know, a lot of book clubs don't want to read a fat book. And I was like, why don't you read? Fat books are so enjoyable. There's so much meat in them. Every book club should read something like The Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoet by David Mitchell, or a wonderful historical novel about Japan, or any number. I can probably talk all day about that. But, you know, do it over your break. If you break in the summer, do it in September. If you break in the winter because you all go to Florida, do it in March or April when you come back. Give yourself one. So the books I was going to mention were I would say The Language of Flowers is a really hot book. It's actually coming out next Tuesday. It's about this woman who grows up in the foster care system and learns to goes through a series of terrible reversals about her relationship with her social worker. She's looking back as an 18-year-old. Booksellers all over the country are loving the book. We had a really great read in our store. And the language is it's using the Victorian language. She uses the Victorian language of expressing herself through the flowers. Sunflower was a really good one, and I don't remember what any of them are. But but that's a book that's getting a lot of buzz from that market, people who like Geraldine Brooks. Certainly, from what you read, you might cross over to our local favorite, Leslie Kagan. Her book, fourth novel, Good Graces, is a follow-up to Whistling in the Dark, which was set in the Washington Park area of Milwaukee in the late 50s. This follows two young girls a year later. They've had a terrible thing happen to them in the first book, and they're sort of recovering only to find it's through the eyes of the older daughter, Sally O'Malley, and the younger daughter is having some struggles. There's some break-ins, and she's worrying about her, and there's also a new girl in town who they're trying to take care of, and their father's died, and their mom's with another guy, and one of the daughters is having trouble with that. She's got a really great sense of humor. There's some dark – She's very good at mixing the darkness of life with sort of the lightness of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice book for that.
All right. Let's go to Victor in Milwaukee. Hi, Victor.
Good morning. Good morning to your guest. I have a book suggestion for the summer. I picked this book up out of coincidence because this is the anniversary of a huge disaster that occurred August 27, 1883. The author's name is Simon Winchester. It's called The Day the World Exploded. Krakatoa. And what's so interesting about this book, it just doesn't focus on Krakatoa, the disaster. That's the centerpiece of the book, but it goes through the drama and the subdrama, what led up to it, you know, the people who came up with the originators of the scientific theories of plate tectonics and Darwinism. And it ties all that together, which leads up to this disaster. And I can't put the book down ever since I picked it up. I'm about maybe a fourth of the way through it, but I recommend that.
Oh, I would say you have a wonderful future ahead of you because Simon Winchester is an incredible writer. He was actually writing for a while before The Professor and the Madman, which is the story about the creation of the Webster's Dictionary. But since then, he's been writing wonderful books. They are very often set in different places. We wound up trying to keep them all together in our general history section. You know, if you have a bit of sense of humor, I might suggest, if you run out of Simon Winchester, I might suggest Tony Horwitz, who has a new book coming, and he is actually married to Geraldine Brooks, just to tie everything together. So I should mention Leslie Kagan's going to do a release. She's having a big release party at Next Chapter on September 1st. And then she's reading at Books and Company and my store after that. But I should give a plug for that.
Okay.
But Simon Winchester. Ooh, that would be great if he came.
All right, Victor?
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Email from Kathleen. I love Boswell books, and I love Connie Willis, the Doomsday book, and to say nothing of the dog.
Oh, back to science fiction. I think next time you have to have Jason on. This crowd is saying, we need somebody who really knows what they're talking about and is not like struggling to say, what?
Yeah, I wouldn't know either. I don't read science fiction, I must say.
I am tempted. I'm reading some of the kids. There's so much in the teen area. There's so much dystopian fiction now. And even in the middle grades. The middle grades I like better because they're not as bloody. Jason, who reads a lot of science fiction, he read the Maze Runner trilogy, which culminates with Scorch Trials, and the last one is the Death, I don't know, Death Cure. Death Cure. He's
good.
Coming. Yeah, nice. Thank you. He's going to be at, we're actually bringing him into the Greenfield Library. It's all over the place on October 25th. And that's a big book for Suzanne Collins fans. And it seems like a lot of book clubs read Suzanne Collins, which was published. That's the, and a lot of science fiction people. And it's also another one of those books that's going to be a movie. It's just selling all up to all these people.
Irish Fest. We're going to do Irish musicians tomorrow. And Mary Pat Kelly will join us, who is an Irish author who wrote this one of these sagas, which I did read over vacation on. It's Galway Bay. It traces the Irish famine, actually, and a family that moves to Chicago. And yeah, it's a heavy book, but it's a good summer read. So I thought we should ask you, because the Irish have produced so many wonderful writers, who do you recommend?
It's a very strong literary culture. I wanted to give a shout out to both Carl and Anne, my booksellers, volunteer at Irish Fest every year. So they get to tell me who's in the cultural booth. And I think the big writer is Patrick Taylor. He's written a series of books, Irish Country Doctor, Irish Country Christmas. He's a wonderful guy. It's sort of like I compare him a little to James Herriot, only with people instead of animals. I think that's their big name. I think it's worth there's so many wonderful reasons to go to Irish Fest, but I think that's one reason to head away from the music for 5 minutes and go into the culture booth.
Yes, yes.
I'm also Carl reads every Irish book imaginable. He just he was picking up one book yesterday that he's in love with, but Irvine Walsh said it was the greatest Irish novel since Ulysses, and so we were wondering, was that hyperbole or not? We decided it probably was. But I would like to say that perhaps one of the best Irish writers around right now is Sebastian Barry, who's written a number of wonderful novels, The Whereabouts of Aeneas McNulty, Annie Dunn, A Long, Long Way, which is the one that I read. It's a World War I novel. They're all about an extended family tree. He was actually better known as a playwright for many years, who wrote occasional novels. And I think at this point, he's more known as a novelist because the last two novels were shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize, which is probably the highest profile award in the English language in the world, probably as big as certainly anything in of the big three in the United States. And his next book comes out pretty shortly, I think September 6th. And I can't remember what it's called, but I'm having him.
Are you?
Which is, we're having him on October 1st. It's a free event. It's called On Kanan's Side. Hooray.
There you go.
Hooray for memory.
That mind.
Good. It's somewhere. He's coming on a weird time Saturday at 3 p.m. because we tend to squeeze in authors between cities that they're always very tightly budgeted, and they figure he's got to go somewhere because he's coming from Ireland. He's traveling with his son, actually. And so 3 p.m. on a Saturday it is. This is actually his first book that's partly set in the United States, and it is one of my favorite genres, the deathbed novel. So it's this woman in a, I believe she's in a home looking at an aged woman looking back on her life and the extended family. I hereby predict this book will win the Man Booker Prize. How's
Daniel.
That?
Daniel, wow.
Well, I think it's already long listed, so
yeah,
what the hey.
Great.
And
great.
I didn't hear of any of the other books on the list.
So what the hey. We're almost out of time. You mentioned Patrick Taylor. We do want to remind our listeners that The Irish Country Doctor is being read on Chapter a Day, and it will conclude this Friday. So if you want a taste of that, this is a good week to do that. Oh, thank you, Daniel. You're just good. You're a great guest, and you're widely read, and I love your enthusiasm.
Pshaw.
Oh, pshaw. I haven't heard that phrase in a long time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mike.
Daniel Golden, he is the owner of Boswell, B-O-S-W-E-L-L Books, which is located on Downer on the east side of Milwaukee, and a great bookstore it is. We will post these books. I know they come fast and furious, and we have a hard time, but we'll put together as many as we can fashion and post them on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, as the days proceed. Give us till more than today, okay? You know what it's like. You got a lot of stuff to do. Thanks to Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and to Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Tomorrow during this hour, we celebrate Irish Fest.